From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Professor Rajeshwari Patel. Professor Patel, who is currently the director of Anandpur campus of the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, was born in Kampala, East Africa, and was fortunate to come to Swami at a very young age. Her life took an eventful turn when Swami instructed her parents to join her in Swami's hostel in Anandpur for her 9th standard. She later joined the Anandpur College and was fortunate to receive the award for all-round excellence from the Divine Hands in 1977. After her graduation, on Swami's guidance, she joined as a lecturer in the Anandpur campus of Swami's University and has been serving in various capacities for over 4 decades. An exemplary speaker and writer, she has given many talks in the Divine Presence. This talk, titled Conquering the 6 Enemies, was delivered in the Purnachandra Auditorium in Prashanthi Nilayam as a part of the Living with Sai Summer Conference organized by the Sathya Sai International Organization in July 2019. Stay tuned, dear listeners. After the talk, we have some soulful bhajans from the album series Bhavanjali. And at 3:30 p.m, we have the live Telugu segment Sri Sathya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari. With that, over to Professor Rajeshwari Patel.
Om Shri Sai Ram. I invoke Bhagwan's divine presence this morning and pray to him to bless us all with his wonderful teachings and help us to put them into practice. Dearest Bhagwan, revered elders, brothers and sisters, every time I come to the podium to speak, I must have come to the same auditorium to speak in front of Bhagwan not less than 15 times. But every time, of course it was on the stage there and not down here, and every time there was one thought process in my mind which is going on even today. Any one of you seated here could as well be speaking instead of me. That thought is there in my mind right now. The reason is that even as a student, Bhagwan used to give very short notice to me to speak in front of him when he visited the Anandpur campus and brought guests with him. If I was in the prayer hall decorating the hall for Bhagwan to come there for his lunch, I would receive a message saying Bhagwan wants you to go to the auditorium and speak. So I would just rush, speak and come. That's how he trained me. And I was always humbled by the fact that Bhagwan wanted to use me to spread his message. So I believe I'm here as a messenger of Sathya Sai. But then there were times when Bhagwan in his discourse would say, it's very easy to make platform speeches and appear a hero, but in practice, zero. So I used to feel very upset about that. And I used to think to myself, I don't want to be just a speaker. I want to be remembered by Bhagwan as a doer, one who applies his teachings in our life. Several years down the line, once in the same auditorium, when I was taking Bhagwan's namaskar before I came to the mic, the microphone, I was lifting my head up from his feet. He whispered very softly, so only I can hear. And he said, "Go slow." He said it in Telugu, "Go slow." And I said, "Swami?" And he said, "I want everyone to understand what you are saying. I want everybody to comprehend what you are conveying. That's why I don't want to be called merely a daughter of Sai. I am a messenger of Sai." And so, no oratory or anything like that. When I was asked by Brother Alex what topic I would like to speak on, then I said, well, having stayed at Bhagwan's divine lotus feet for 49 years, I suppose I should be able to speak on any topic that you would like to give me. And he said, nobody else has agreed to speak on the Arishad Vargas, the six enemies. Would you be able to do that? Then I said, if Swami has chosen to make me stand here, definitely I will be able to do the job, hopefully to his expectation. Now see, I think, I don't know if all of you know what these six enemies are. The six Arishad Varga. Shad means six Varga. So they are the enemies of man. Kama, that is desire. Krodha, that is anger. Lobha, that is greed. Moha, that is attachment. Mada, that is arrogance or ego. And Matsarya, that is jealousy. Now, you know, these six enemies, why do we even call them enemies of man? Because they have the power to destroy us completely. But what we need to remember is that each of these enemies of man, they do not act independently. They are interconnected. That is, if you have desire, and if desire enters your mind, it will bring along with it anger if your desire is not fulfilled. And it will bring greed, it will bring attachment, it will bring arrogance when you achieve the object that you want to get hold of. And then it will bring Matsarya also along with it, because you are jealous if somebody tries to take it away from you, or if somebody else also has it. So they are interconnected. That is what you will find everywhere. But I would like to, you know, if you go to any books or all that, this is what they will tell you. But I would like to take a more positive approach. If you prevent one of them from entering your mind, none of them will be able to enter your mind. What I said before is, if one enters, all the others will also enter. And then the destruction is going to be total. But if you do not allow, first of all, desire to enter your mind, then anger will not enter, cannot enter, lobha cannot enter. So you are blocking all the other five enemies if you are able to stop one from entering. Now I'll come to some part of the explanation of this a little later, just want to bring in a little bit of the practical into this, and then we'll go to a deep understanding of what these six enemies really do to us. You know, as a young student, 13 years old, and entered the Anandpur campus as a schoolgirl, there was no plan to go to Anandpur in high school, because there was a college. But when Bhagwan asked my parents to keep me at Anandpur and do my schooling in one of the only English medium schools in Anandpur town at the time, I was thinking in my mind, because I was not so excited about it as you all think. You know, at that age, I was very attached to my parents. But I haven't stopped thinking about it. Why did Bhagwan bring me to his physical proximity at that age? He could have called me when I was in college. But I just want to tell you some of my very childish experiences relating to that high school period. Then I will relate it to the first enemy, that is desire. I used to, being the youngest in the family, very much pampered at home. But when I joined Anandpur as a high school girl, Swami made sure that all the college girls started pampering me. But that didn't stop me from remembering my mom and all the good food and all the things that I desired. And you'll be surprised if I tell you that there was not a single, the smallest of the smallest desire at that time that Bhagwan did not fulfill. The smallest of the smallest. And then you would think, is Swami asking you to have more and more desires? Then he will fulfill all of them. I realized as I grew up that Swami was waiting for me to come to a point in my life when I will desire only His love. Only desire His divine proximity. So that is why I said any one of you could be actually speaking here and I could be sitting there. I'm sure all of us have experienced that. That we have these small desires and we think it's wrong to desire at all. Of course not. Because as Sri Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it is better to follow your own dharma, swadharma. Swa means your own. So it's better to follow your own dharma, however imperfect, than to follow another's dharma, however perfect. So Bhagwan never expected any one of us to make the leap to a desireless state. He wanted us to move gradually from the state of desires to a state when you desire for liberation, you desire for His love, you desire for His divine proximity. That is the great transformation that Bhagwan brings about. And when I told you in the beginning that if you can stop desire there at the doorstep, then none of the other qualities will enter in. So you see, I took care of that first step. And if you ask me if any of the other five enemies have ever attacked me, I shouldn't be saying this, but by God's grace, I don't have any of those. I don't remember ever feeling jealous of anyone, even somebody who is physically close to Bhagwan. I was just happy and contented to be where I was. Anger. Of course, I get angry with my students at times when they do some mistake. But as Bhagwan says, it's not krodha, it's not that kind of anger which is your enemy. Your parents, some of the young adults who are there, your parents must be, you know, putting you in your place, right, at times. Is that wrong? Of course not. Swami used to differentiate between righteous anger and unrighteous anger. Righteous anger and unrighteous anger. So, unrighteous anger is the anger that has no basis, which actually feeds your ego. But righteous anger is when you have a purpose and a reason, but from inside you are not affected. You are doing it because you love the other person, you care for the other person, and you want to help that other person. And the kind of simple living that Bhagwan has encouraged among his devotees, I don't think that any of us can say that we have lobha. So, no greed, because we are contented with what God has given. If you have a desire for something which is not yours, then you get angry because you feel somebody is an obstacle, or you get angry that you didn't get the object of your desire because you're not capable of getting it. So, for example, you desire chocolate. Then you go on thinking about chocolate. I like chocolate very much. I like chocolate very much. You get attached to chocolate. Then when does this anger come? When your mother, who you expect to get you the chocolate, says no, no more chocolate. So you get angry with her. And what do you say to yourself? My mom doesn't love me at all. So you see, as again Sri Krishna says in the Gita, dwelling on the objects of the senses leads to attachment. And attachment leads to desire. Because you want more and more. So, leads to desire. And desire leads to delusion. And delusion leads to destruction of the intellect, so you don't know how to discriminate between right and wrong. For example, especially in today's generation, I'm sure there are many of us who are witness to it. I suppose we were much easier to handle by our parents, but we have children we cannot handle. If we refuse them anything, they will take us to the police. I don't know if you have 911 or something, you could call and say, my parents are doing this, and you know. So destruction of the intellect means that you are deluded about who you are. You forget yourself. You forget that you really love your mom or she loves you, and that you are supposed to, or you owe her respect. You forget everything. You are ready to wield maybe a stick or a knife because you know, when you hear about in the media about some sick person shooting in schools, universities, frustrated people, they are victims of the six enemies. Let me tell you, there is just no other explanation. You cannot justify or validate that action. So you see here, the child loses all sense of right and wrong, and then he wields a knife about to harm his mother. And then you know what will happen. Of course, if he's caught, which will usually happen, he is arrested and taken to jail. So there you have it, a total destruction of man's life. So I think staying with Bhagwan, even if you are not directly Bhagwan's students, I'm sure all of us are students of Bhagwan's philosophy and Bhagwan's teachings. So all of us are his students. What we learn to do is, step by step, if the six enemies have already overpowered us, to make each one of them one by one loosen their grip over us. And that is what can be done through sadhana. That brings me to this other point. When we were in high school, and I told you already that I joined Bhagwan's college at a young age, one of the highlights of my early years in Bhagwan's institution was he insisted at that young age that we must do sadhana. And he was very clear about it, that it doesn't matter if you are doing sadhana now, doesn't mean that you are going to become a sannyasin later on. You know, many parents are afraid to put their children in those days in Swami's institution because they thought if they put them in Swami's college, they will all become sannyasins. It's not so easy to become a sannyasin. But that's the wrong concept they had. But, you know, doing sadhana at a young age is very, very helpful in controlling our mind. Some basic things that he started with, if there are a few students here in the audience, ex-students, either whether boys or girls, they will be able to substantiate. Swami used to give us simple lessons. Do not waste time. Is that any way connected to the six enemies? Of course. Sadhana of every kind, even these simple teachings of Bhagwan, they are all connected to the six enemies. So do not waste time, he used to say. Do not waste food. So we are talking of lobha and all that. You can actually in a subtle way connect all of this. I'll bring you to some really interesting things. Do not waste water. Water is not an inexhaustible resource. So by controlling our use of water, excessive water, we're actually controlling our mind. Do not waste water. Do not waste food. Do not waste time, because you know idle mind is a devil's workshop. All the six enemies will easily get in. So do not waste time. Do not waste sound. You know, I got so used to that, not talking loudly, even in normal conversation, that if I have to, you know, keep quiet a noisy class and enter, and they're all, you know, how young girls can, you know. So I have to take the duster and hit it on the table to draw their attention because they can't hear my voice. Swami used to say that we must not waste sound, not talk louder than necessary. So do not waste energy. And you know, it's surprising the way he related it. Do not waste energy also meant, do not go on thinking, you know, crowd your mind with thoughts, because you become tired. So you waste your energy. He used the example of a radio. If a radio is kept on, you may not be listening to it. How much energy it will take, I mean, in terms of electrical power. Same way, if your mind goes on chatting inside, talking inside, without a break, it will tire you. I don't know if any of us have had the experience, when we are watching television. Swami used to call it televisham. But that's okay. You know by now, I hope, all of us grown-ups, what to watch, what not to watch. About that we can talk about later. But if you sit in the morning on the couch till evening and get all the food, you know, by your mother who's pampering you and bring it to your couch, and you watch throughout the day till 6 or 7, you watch television. Do you know how lethargic you become? Because all the crying and the laughing and the anger and all the emotions that are depicted on the television screen, you are undergoing that inside, though you are sitting actually static. That's what Sri Krishna talks about, action in inaction. So we think that we are sitting, we are not acting, but we are acting. Because the mind is so active. And then you feel lazy and lethargic and feel that, you know, you don't have any energy to do anything. So, that's why Bhagavan said, do not waste sound. One last thing which I remember he often mentioned was, don't waste looks. By looks he meant looking here and there like sparrows. So he used to insist that when you don't need to look around, if you're searching for somebody, of course you have to look around. You can't look down and search for that person, you will not find. So you have to be practical. Bhagavan's messages are very, very practical. Don't look around unnecessarily. Now why? What is wrong? If you look at somebody, a thought process will begin. You are not aware of it. Somebody is wearing, oh, she's wearing a maroon color sari. So I also have one like that. Maybe I will wear that tomorrow. No, look at that. What else is she? So you see this whole thought process which is so unnecessary. And so he used to often tell us, when you're walking or you're not necessary for you to look up, put your eyes down and walk. So that is the kind of sadhana he expected us all to do when we were students. So still have the habit, and I think it becomes part of your personality and way of life. So not to go on looking around all the time, because if you are a true sadhaka, as I said, you don't have to renounce the world for that. But if you are a true sadhaka, you'll stop your mind in going in different directions like the monkey does and keep it under control and let it be steadily focused on the job to be done at that moment. You know, Swami used to help us to practice it, is to say, watch your left foot go forward, and then watch your right foot going forward. So you see, we are focusing on that, we are not thinking of anything else, we are so busy, we are not looking at anything. So that is what, you know, I just saw on the screen, self-awareness. And I think that is what made us more aware of who we are and where we are going. You know, sometimes if you're looking around here and there, then you trip. So we know where we are going in the literal sense as well.
Ganeshwara Ganadhipa
Ganeshwara Ganadhipa
Ganeshwara Ganadhipa
Ganeshwara Ganadhipa
Vigneshwara Vina
Vinayaka
Ganeshwara Ganadhipa
Ganeshwara Ganadhipa
Nirvikalpa Niramaya
Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.
I don't want to necessarily give only experiences of mine with Bhagwan, because I want to convey some solid message as well. I'm sure there are many speakers who will come to this podium and tell Bhagwan's experiences. Even when we used to have in our student days, and later we had the summer course on Indian culture and spirituality, I was among the very few who used to speak on the topic, even in those days. Because most of the time, we want to listen to Bhagwan's leelas and miracles and all that. But you know, my own experience as a teacher and as the senior teacher later, and then as the director of the campus, I'm telling you this very honestly. We have in our university practice of choosing an all-round student. Now, those days Bhagwan used to choose, now we have a committee which chooses. And I'm being very honest, because we are Sai family. We select first the students based on their merit. So we see their grade points and take the top 10. And then we take other aspects, ask the warden, the wing teacher and the roommates, and then we make a list. And while all of them have a lot of devotion for Swami, if we ask them to tell us in two sentences, one or two sentences, something about Bhagwan's teachings that they liked very much, let me tell you, you'll be surprised Love all, serve all, help ever, hurt never. That's all they tell. And then we think to ourselves, is this student going to represent our institute when she leaves? You see, the connect with Bhagwan's message has to be so deep that if you are asked, what is Bhagwan's message? Some highlights, one has to be able to do that. So when we listen only to the miracles and all that, I feel that we are not really representing Bhagwan completely. So, in between here and there, whatever, but I think we should go back to the text. I think I don't have too much time, just 5 more minutes. You know, there's one little story I will tell you which Professor Kasturi shared on greed. There was one boy who used to sweep Bhagwan's room and clean it up every day. Small boy. Not too small, he's not a kid, but it's a boy. And in those days, the time about which Professor Kasturi writes, there were no rooms like how we have now all around. This East Prashanti, West Prashanti, nothing was there. And so it was a practice in those days. Even when I came, it was like that. There were no rooms. So in those days, it was the practice among devotees to give all their valuables, especially the jewelry, bundle it up and give it to Bhagwan for safekeeping. Till they leave Prashanta Nilayam, he would keep it. You know, that's why, you know, when as a student, I was made in charge with another teacher. I was asked to look after the safe custody cell, which was next to the accommodation in, you know, many years ago when I was a student. I used to feel very proud because I was doing the kind of work that Bhagwan did so many years ago. Just imagine, he's the avatar, he's God. But for his devotees, he was keeping safely their valuable jewelry so that since they don't have proper rooms, no locks and whatnot, that the jewelry will be safe with Bhagwan. Now this boy, every day, he used to sweep Bhagwan's room and he had an eye on that. You know, Bhagwan's tests are very tough. He will give you a teaching, just like a teacher in a class. She'll give you a lecture and then give you an assignment or a test right after. So Bhagwan used to spread this jewelry at times. So this boy has seen the jewelry. And every day when Bhagwan used to go for his bath, this boy used to pick up one piece, put it in his pocket, and when Swami came out, Swami would even give him a pat when he left the room. This went on for days. One day, Bhagwan called Professor Kasturi and he said, "This is what this boy has been doing for the past few days." And Kasturiji was surprised. He said, "Swami, what is this? We have to report it. We should catch him and report him to the police." Then Swami said, "No, that is your way. It is not my way." So this theft, because of desire for gold, greed, you see how each of them are connected? It continued for some time. Then one day, this boy just disappeared with the bundle. And then everybody was wondering, especially because Professor Kasturi knew it, the devotees didn't know anything about it, thankfully, and Swami made sure they didn't know. And he said, "Now what are we going to do?" So it seems Swami told Professor Kasturi, "Go to all the devotees and ask them to give the description of the jewel or ornament that they have left in my safekeeping." So he made a list and all that. And he was waiting to see what will happen next. Now what happened is, this boy ran away and he had a partner. You see, usually you have partners in crime, isn't it? So he, you know, that person will help you if something goes wrong. So he and his partner, they ran away and they were staying in a lodge. Of course, the lodge owner didn't know anything about it. And they were staying in this lodge and they started distrusting each other. Again, matsarya or jealousy. So this boy thought that his friend might take away everything, now that he knows that it's there with him under the pillow. And this other friend of his, he said, so they started a big fight and it became a brawl, you know, and so noisy that the lodge owner came and said, what's going on? And then he called the police and got them, you know, arrested and taken to the police station. The best part is that bundle of jewelry just disappeared and fell and dropped in Swami's room. That time, this boy was thinking, I've left it behind, but it disappeared. And it fell on Swami's bed. And so, the next day, Swami had spread it all out, see, on a small cloth, spread out all the jewelry separately, and he covered it with a newspaper and went for his bath after sending word for Professor Kasturi to come and see him. And Professor Kasturi says something which all of us need to remember. He said, one thing that you have to remember when you are in the presence of God, don't touch anything. You think, okay, it's there, so let me peep, you know, lift the paper and see what's there. He didn't do that. He was just waiting outside in the room. Swami came out from the bath and he said, Kasturi, did you see? He said, Swami, what? And he said, lift that paper and see. And all the jewelry was safe. And then Swami said, now bring that list. So picking up the list, each one's jewelry or item or ornament was safely returned to the devotees. Now, what are the lessons we learn from this is, for those of us who are teachers or parents, we must give chance to the person to transform himself or herself. That's one thing. We must not punish right away. We must do some counseling. And then God takes charge. He will make sure. So, you know, when I have a difficult situation, I don't have children of my own, but I have 500 daughters at Anantapur. And I really love them. Sometimes they do mistakes. And then you call them and counsel them, guide them, advise them. Because I feel that I'm keeping all these daughters in safe custody with me. The parents will question me tomorrow. So that sense of responsibility. None of them should be ejected from the system. Sent out of that system. As far as possible, we have to reform. We have to transform. That's what Swami wants. Did you notice that in all these years, many devotees might have left Bhagwan, but he never sent them out. So I'll just end with this. I think I don't have more time than that. I have just 2 minutes or so. Okay. The one occasion when Bhagwan called all of us old students, some of us who are already teachers also in the college, and some thing had happened that had hurt Swami. And you know how parents are, you know, when their sons do something, or their uncles or aunts or somebody does something. I think especially mothers have the habit of confiding in their daughters their personal problems, or just heavy heart, you share your emotions with them. That's what I felt. Swami was saying all that which hurt him at the physical level. Bhagwan is above all that, we know, but these are lessons for us. So he was saying that I'm really hurt that I did so much for all these people they want to go, it's fine, let them go. But why should they go and then start talking negatively? So he was expressing it. He was speaking in Telugu. I was not familiar with Telugu language in terms of speaking. Now I can speak fluently. But at that time I could understand Telugu very well, but I could not speak. So I was sitting right behind in the interview room. That was my usual place. Because I knew if Swami wanted to call you or talk to you, distance is not important. So I never had that horsepower and running for the first line. Wherever I am, he wants to talk, he will come. He'll part the Red Sea and he will come. You know, there's nothing that can stop him. So I always was very content. So I was sitting behind and I was much moved by Bhagwan's very human response. So I lifted myself up and I told him, you know, in English, Swami, please don't feel bad that these people have gone away from you. We are there. We are still there. So I think for a moment Bhagwan's eyes were filled. But he acted as if he didn't understand English. And he asked the warden, Jaima Madam, tell me in Telugu what she's saying. Then ma'am said, repeat it again. And then she translated. He was still not satisfied. He's saying, say it again. See, he wanted to hear it 3 times. I said, Swami, don't feel unhappy. We are all there. Never leave your lotus feet. We didn't know about other events in the future, but even at that time, I told Swami clearly, no question of leaving your lotus feet. And you know what he said? I never ask anyone to leave me. It is they who leave me and go away. And that I have never forgotten till today. He does not send any one of us. If we think so, then we are deluded. We do not know his ways. He may, if your good karmas or your merit is over, and you have not done the sadhana to accumulate some more merit, see, it's like your bank balance. You can't draw from the bank account, even if you give a check. You won't get anything. It'll bounce back. We have to remember that. It's not enough that we come to Bhagwan and say we are Swami's devotees, but we have to become better human beings, good human beings, follow his teachings in our life, and not just talk about it. Live his teachings in our life. And that will be accumulation of fresh merit that will keep us with him. Otherwise, he is not sending us out. It is ourself. Our bank balance has become zero. And so a situation gets created that makes it appear as if he has rejected you. He never rejects anyone. So, what do we need to do to conquer these 6 enemies? We have to go to Bhagwan, to go to God, with love and humility, and pray to him to keep those 6 enemies away from us. There is no complex sadhana that you have to do. Just prayer. Swami, please see that Maya does not touch me. Swami, see that I will desire only for one thing, and that is you. If at all, then liberation. If at all, then your divine proximity, and to be always available to you in your service. Let me not desire anything else. Don't allow my monkey mind to jump from here to there. Just prayer. I think practically for the last 35 years, that has been my constant prayer. Not a single day have I stopped praying for that. We have to pray to Bhagwan to keep that Maya which is in his control away from us. So if we do that, then we will definitely be able to conquer the 6 enemies. Jai Sai Ram. So any questions?
Sai Ram, thank you, Auntie, for the wonderful talk. We all took away many things that I think we can go back and make practical use of. So we have 2 questions. What are some practical ways to calm down our agitated mind?
Breath control is practical. When you get agitated, just take deep breath, hold the breath for some time, and then release it. That is practical. Physical, practical method. If you are agitated, especially due to anger, and Swami used to, you know, dramatize that anger and show us how anger looks when it is not in control, and then he used to say, either go for a walk, brisk walk, or drink some cold water. If that doesn't work, look at yourself in the mirror and see how you look. That will calm you down. So these are the few practical lessons that Bhagwan taught us.
Another question is, when meeting or seeing people who hurt me, I tend to remember the hurt feeling they caused, forgetting that I must see good in them, as Swami says. How do I get over this feeling?
You know, when whether it's people who are dear to you or you love a lot, if you are in the path of sadhana, then it should be a love without expectations. And so if they hurt you, sometimes we are also hurt by people around us. If not our family, then somebody to whom we have done a good turn. And I feel that if we give up this sense of doership, that I am the doer, that somebody to whom I showed so much of love, and now you see this person is hurting me. If you can give up that sense of doership. No, for example, I'll just give this one example. You know, we used to offer Bhagwan prasadam in boxes. I think some of the students know. And then we used to wrap it up nicely and then, you know, offer it for his birthday. Of course, Bhagwan is not going to eat all those sweets, you know very well. When we offer it to Bhagwan, he gives it to his devotees and sweetens their mouth. I used to practice this, that's why I'm just telling you. I don't want to tell you anything that I'm not practicing myself. I used to see sometimes either my classmates or some teachers, whoever sitting on, also see our boxes Swami has brought out. Once you offered, you're not supposed to have that sense that these boxes belong to us, and Swami sent that out for that. You should cancel it once you have given it to him. Then you have to cancel this sense of having given. It's not easy. It's very difficult. But we have to do that. Because once it's given to him, we should not be able to recognize it also. It's not ours anymore. So I feel that if we give up this sense of being the one doing the thing, then we will be able to manage. The other point which I would probably mention is, if somebody has deeply hurt you, and you're not able to overcome that. Once in the context of a person who is not very good, we asked a question to Bhagwan, how do we avoid such people who are not on the bad, okay, I mean, I don't know whether anybody is really bad, but put it in quotes, or somebody who's done some wrong to you. And Swami said, avoid and you should have the knack of avoiding and going in a different direction. Don't come face to face. Don't have confrontation with such people. So if they've hurt you, it is going to go back to them. If you have done good to that person, that good will stay with them. But if they do not return it in terms of, you know, I'm not talking of gratitude, because when Bhagwan can do so much for us without expectation of anything. But that person, it will fall back on them. So they are going to be the person paying the price So you don't start paying the price on the other person's behalf. Just stay out of it and try to lift your mind above these hurts and pains and all that. It's part of life, not to give it so much of importance. Thank you, Saira.
Krishnaya Vasudevaya Haraye Paramatmane Pranada Klesha Nashaya Shri Govindaya Namo Namaha.
Manam
ghanashyam sundara.
Shri Ra.
दर्शन दो प्रभु साई नाथा,
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 दर्श दिखाओ साई नाथा,
दर्श दिखाओ साई नाथा,
दर्श दिखाओ साई नाथा,
दर्श दिखाओ साई नाथा,
दर्शन दो प्रभु साई नाथा,
दर्शन
सुनो मेरे श्याम गोपाला,
अर्ज सुनो मेरे श्याम गोपाला,
अर्ज सुनो मेरे श्याम गोपाला,
अर्ज सुनो मेरे श्याम गोपाला,
श्याम गोपाला साई गोपाल, दर्शन दो प्रभु साई नाथा,
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 दर्श दिखाओ साई नाथा,
दर्श दिखाओ
दर्शन दो प्रभु साई नाथा,
दर्शन दो प्रभु साई नाथा,
अर्ज सुनो मेरे श्याम गोपाला, सुनो मेरे साई गोपाला,
सुनो मेरे साई गोपाला,
वृंदावन के नंदलाला,
वृंदावन के नंदलाला,
वृंदावन के नंदलाला, दर्शन दो प्रभु साई।
अन्यथा शरणं नास्ति त्वमेव शरणं मम तस्मात् कारुण्यभावेन रक्ष रक्ष साईश्वरा साई भगवान् हे प्रेममय भगवान्
आनन्दमय भगवान् हे प्रेममय भगवान्
आनन्दमय भगवान् हे
कृपा करो भगवान्
आनन्दमय भगवान्।
प्रेमामया भगवान् भगवान् साई भगवान्
भगवान् साई भगवान्
आनन्दमया भगवान् हे प्रेममया भगवान्
आनन्दमया भगवान् हे
करुणानिधे प्रभु साईरा
करुणानिधे प्रभु साईरा
कृपानिधे दिनों के प्राण
कृपानिधे दिनों के प्राण
कृपानिधे दिनों के शरण लगा लो
प्रभु मुझे शरण लगा लो
मुझे दया करो भगवान्
मुझे दया करो भगवान्
मुझे कृपा करो भगवान्
मुझे कृपा करो भगवान्
आनन्दमय भगवान् हे प्रेममय भगवान्।
Sarasvati. Saraswati.